one. I went 2-2. It's kind of funny. Last year, throughout the whole season, you dominated me, and then come playoff time, I heated up with the Giants and a few other picks. So maybe the team that you're going with this year is the one that's gonna make surprise people and make the Super Bowl. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think last year I was saying all that matters when it comes to picking games on a podcast is the regular season.
Yeah.
I've changed my philosophy on that. Now I think all that matters is the playoffs. This is where it matters. This is the heat of the battle. So forget the regular season. But I actually do feel that way about the Seahawks, but we'll get to them later. Let's start with the Saturday, not morning game, the early Saturday game. That, of course, is Denver hosting Baltimore. Denver is a 9.5 to 10 point favorite at most books at this point, and it's a tough team to pick against.
It really is, and 9.5 it is a little much, but I actually do still think they win this game by about 10 or 11. I mean, it's no secret. We've been talking for months now about how I think Denver's the best team in the AFC. And at this point, I'm pretty convinced that I have them as the class of the whole NFL. I've said it before. I'll say it again. They just don't really have any glaring weaknesses anywhere. The only thing you can really point to probably is they don't really have a stud at running back. No, Sean Marino, has been okay in his career. But when you have Peyton Manning, who's so effective with the play action and getting the running game involved, you don't really need a stud. I mean, he made Joseph Addai really good in Indianapolis, and he's doing the same with these guys in Denver. So I'm not really even concerned about their lack of a running game.
Yeah, this team, there are other teams in the league that I might like more in a vacuum, but this team every single week shows up and dominates its opponent, and there's something to be said about that. Over the last 11 games, they're 11-0. They haven't allowed more than 24 points in any of those games, and in 7 of them, they've allowed 17 or less. They've scored 30 or more points in just about all of them. I believe there are only 2 exceptions, and one of them they scored 26. It's just a well-oiled machine on both sides of the ball. And last week you were talking about how you didn't think Baltimore was going to be the team to end this Colts run. But in the end, it did turn out to be that they still have the raw talent, and with the Ray Lewis thing, they have the emotion as well. But now I have to use your logic this week and say, this Denver team isn't infallible. And to be fair, if we're going to call the Colts out for an easy schedule, the Broncos had an easy schedule too. After they had those early losses and started off 2-3, they got to play the Chargers, the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Jags, a bunch of bad teams. So it's fair to say that this team could fold against a great team. I don't think the Baltimore Ravens are a great team, and I don't think it's going to be at home.
Yeah, and let's not forget that these two teams met in Baltimore in December, and I think Denver was up 34-3, and Baltimore tacked on a late couple touchdowns to make the scoreline look somewhat respectable, but it wasn't that at all. Joe Flacco is the key for me for Baltimore, and he came into the season, demanding elite respect, and he, led them to that victory, albeit controversial, over the Patriots with the field goal that may or may not have gone in. So he had that in the beginning, and then in the middle of the season, towards the end, he just disappeared in some games, this one included, where he only put up 3 points until the fourth quarter. If the Ravens want a chance, and I think that if they do win, they're going to want to do it in a non-shootout, but that's probably going to be the only way, because I just don't see, as great as Baltimore's defense played last week, there's no way that Denver scores under 24, I don't think. I think they're in the area of 27-30, if not upwards of 35 or so. Baltimore, you have to figure the way they're playing, especially against this Broncos defense, which has been fantastic, they have to max out at 21 or 24. So if you just do the math there, it's not favorable for the Ravens. So Flacco has to be huge. Ray Rice has to have a big game. And probably the big thing is, because the Ravens in the past have given Peyton Manning struggles in the playoffs. They've held him to only field goals a few times. And they're going to have to do it again. Ed Reed is a ball-hawking safety still, even at 33 or so. He's going to have to make a play, maybe a game-changing interception type play on Peyton, who is capable, if you will, of making that, trying to do too much and making a throw he shouldn't make that Ed Reed could pick off. We've seen that a lot in the past.
Yeah, I think the key here is Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, because last time around, when these two teams met in Week 15, the game was over before it really began.
Yeah.
That was the game that I actually thought Baltimore was going to win. I think I picked it here on the podcast because they were at home, and I didn't think they'd drop a game like that. Not only did they drop it, they got annihilated. It's one of those things where you look at that game just a couple weeks ago, and that was in Baltimore, and now here we are in Denver, and what's changed? And what's changed is Ray Lewis, and that's no small thing,
sure.
Because it's not just his position, it's what he does to the entire defense.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, was last week's awesome defensive performance more to do with the Colts being a young team on the road without their offensive coordinator, or was it the fact that Ray Lewis is back and the Ravens are back?
Yeah.
I'm not sure which it is, but regardless, we know what we're going to get out of Denver on both sides of the ball. You mm-hmm. never know what you're going to get out of Baltimore.
Yeah.
So not only is Denver safer, if you look at Peyton Manning over the course of his career against Baltimore, it's funny. I distinctly remember all those playoff games where the one there were no touchdowns, where they won 15-6 and 15-9.
Yeah.
And I remember those games, but then if you actually look at the game log, in his last seven games against Baltimore, Peyton Manning was 7-0 straight up and against the spread. Now, I don't think he had to cover too many 10-point spreads in those days, but in the end, he got the upper hand. He made the plays when he needed to, and the spread, I believe, is the only thing that's really in question here. I'd be very surprised if Joe Flacco outplays Peyton Manning. If the bye gets to this team, this isn't a team that's going to lose its focus.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was after the last bye that they cut out that bad start business and started this amazing onslaught.
Mm-hmm.
So, if anything, this is the type of team that I think recharges its batteries on a bye and doesn't go ice cold.
Yeah, and let's also not forget that they played in Week 17. It's a lot of times, especially last year, the Green Bay was an issue where they didn't play a lot of players Week 17. Denver was playing up to the end of the
season.
Absolutely. I agree. I have 31-20 in my head for Denver winning this, which does cover the spread, albeit just slightly. And I think that's going to be in that area. The big thing really is that Baltimore cannot fall behind early. If they fall behind, let's say Denver gets the ball, scores a touchdown, and they get a 10-14 point lead, then Elvis Dumervil and Von Miller are just going to have, they're going to be unleashed on Joe Flacco, and it's going to be a really long day for him. If Baltimore can control the score, keep it close, and make Von Miller and Dumervil respect Ray Rice in the run, maybe not pressure Flacco so much, that'll give him some time, and the Ravens could have a shot at it, but if Denver jumps out to an early lead, much as they did in the last game, it's going to be a long day for Baltimore.
Yeah, this is actually the spread I like the least on the board, because as much as I like Denver to win it, I could see them winning it, you know, 27-21 in a game that's never really in doubt, but they just kind of stay ahead of, because, you know, Peyton Manning isn't interested in style points at this point, and neither are the Denver Broncos. They're just going to go out there and take care of business. I expect them to roll, but I also don't expect Baltimore to just roll over and die, especially, again, not only considering this might be Ray Lewis's last game, but there are whispers that it could be Ed Reed's as well.
Yeah.
So this team should rally, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the defense potentially hold Denver under that 30-point barrier. But it's going to be really tough for them to get it done on both sides of the ball against a team that's been so consistently strong for the better part of 3 months now.
Yeah.
So moving on to the Sunday or Saturday night game. Green Bay at San Francisco. This, in my opinion, is the best game of the week.
It's definitely up there, and it's one that I'm kind of going a little back and forth on. I mean, Green Bay last week caught a huge break, clearly, with Christian Ponder being a late scratch and Joe Webb. And, you know, I thought that actually the Vikings would be able to do something for most of the first half, and then maybe at halftime the Packers would make adjustments, shut them down a little bit. And the first drive, the Vikings moved the ball, got a field goal, and from there the coordinators figured it out immediately. Joe Webb was not able to do anything the rest of the game, and Green Bay, you know, they won 24-10 in a game that wasn't even that close.
Yeah, Tony Dungy is rattling on about how Joe Webb is going to catch him off guard and everything, and that made perfect sense. I was thinking that might be the case, too. It's tough when you don't get a chance to prepare for a quarterback like that.
Mm-hmm.
And to Minnesota's defense, they did a great job keeping that a secret, because in this Twitter world, you usually don't see it go, oh, by the way, everybody, the starting quarterback isn't playing. That's pretty rare. But the problem is, like you said, so they had one drive, and the defensive coordinator said, wait a minute, this guy can't throw.
Yeah.
So let's just load the box, and that's it. I don't, what's the problem? It was a pretty easy thing to solve, and it even had Adrian Peterson down to a modest 99 yards,
yeah.
because they were just loading the box. There was no threat of a pass, and you're not going to have it nearly that easy this week against San Francisco, yeah. obviously.
And these two teams met in the opening week, and San Francisco won in Green Bay and was leading through most of the game. But
23-7 going into the third
quarter. But I don't really put much into that just because it was week one, and these are two different teams now, I think, especially with you look at the 49ers. I mean, Alex Smith was the quarterback there. Now you have Colin Kaepernick who comes in, and for the 49ers, I'm not sure if there's a team I'm more confused about right now that's still in the playoffs, just because if you look in December, I mean, remember they were blowing out the Patriots 31-3. New England came back and tied it up, yep. only to have San Francisco win it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked fantastic, looked terrible, won the game, and then they just looked awful the next week against Seattle. And this is the number two team.
That was one of my four good picks yeah. this year, I think.
So, you know, because of that, I'm having trouble believing that this team is going to beat Green Bay, a team that I've had at the top, you know, maybe not the top spot, but in a wagon of three or four teams at the top of the NFC all year. So because of that, I'm having trouble finding Green Bay losing in this spot when the offense is finally healthy. I don't want to. The defense's problems are clearly not gone by only allowing 10 points to Joe Webb, but it is good that they were able to make adjustments that quickly, made some plays. And if we're being honest, even kind of not necessarily had an off week, but they're not that banged up after that game because, sure. it wasn't as tough as the 49ers are going to be, which is going to be a very tough game. The 49ers have the bye, so that's good for them. Travel. It's a really interesting game. It really is.
It's a valid point to bring up San Francisco's current form. They had that win against New England, and everybody was thinking, okay, this might be the team to beat again, because yeah. here's a team, San Francisco, that went on the road and beat Green Bay in the beginning of the season, yep. went on the road and beat New Orleans when they were starting to feel it, went yep. on the road and beat New England. I mean, if you can run that gauntlet, that means you could probably do some damage in the playoffs, too. This is a team that dominates at home under Jim Harbaugh. They've only lost four games at home under him.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a valid point. They got crushed by Seattle, absolutely yeah. manhandled by Seattle. And regardless of anything I had to say about that game, about that being a good spot for Seattle, there's no excuse for that type of a game.
Sure.
Similar to the national championship. I thought Bama would win. I didn't know they put up 28 points in 5 minutes. And then the last game of the season, it ends up being fine. It ends up being a blowout win over the Cardinals. But
wasn't
if you watch
pretty.
Bits and pieces
no.
of that, that was not a good game, especially in the first half. Really sloppy.
6-0, I think, at halftime or something.
Yeah, it was a really sloppy game, and that had a lot more to do with Arizona just being the worst.
Terrible.
As opposed to San Francisco really turning it on. The reason I like the 49ers here, or I have two reasons I like the 49ers here, and I go back and forth because I think the Green Bay Packers are more than capable of winning the Super Bowl. This is one of those teams, especially now that they are healthy on offense. But what the whole Adrian Peterson saga showed us, or I should say made clear, is how weak this Green Bay defense is against the run.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the story was the pass defense, which we've justified multiple times here. But rushing defense, there's not really much justification for.
Yeah.
And this is a team that gives up 118 yards per game on the ground. And we've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it in past weeks. And now you've got San Francisco, who rushes for 155 yards a game, fourth best in the league. Frank Gore obviously leads that attack. And back in week one, they really dominated that game.
I agree.
But that was a team that, remember, Green Bay was coming off of an incredible season that ended up falling short in the playoffs. You knew they were going to come out hungry to try and get another undefeated stretch going. And they went into Lambeau Field and dominated them. And they did it rushing 186 yards and really controlling line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Now, Green Bay's rushing defense, nothing's changed. Last week, again, you get to load 9 in the box. You don't get to do that against San Francisco. This team can actually throw and actually has versatile offense. So the rushing defense is a concern that I think San Francisco can exploit.
Sure.
And San Francisco, one of the best defenses in the league, has had an extra week to prepare for this offense that really hasn't been in sync. We kind of thought that everybody was going to come back and they would just start running roughshod on league again. They had spots in the first Minnesota game, and they also had some down spots in the second half. They looked great. But I thought they were going to carry that over into the playoffs into a dominant effort, and they really didn't. No. If it wasn't for the fact that Minnesota was never going to do anything on offense, that one could have been a game. In the third quarter, they looked great. They put up their points. And you're never going to hold Green Bay down for all four quarters.
Sure.
But I think with the amount of time San Francisco's had to repair and as good as their defense is and the amount of time that they can control the ball, you were saying last week, how important is it to keep the Green Bay offense off the field? Mm-hmm. And San Francisco truly is built for that. And Frank Gore truly is built for playoff football. San Francisco ended last year's playoffs in heartbreak, too.
Yeah.
They should have won that game against the Giants, if not for a couple of botched kick returns. I think that's all fresh on everyone's mind.
Including the fans as well, who are just going to be absolutely
nuts. So I think the fact that it's in San Francisco makes all the difference here. If that last week hadn't gone the way it had, and San Francisco was going to Green Bay, I'd probably be preaching the opposite, but... I think all signs point to San Francisco here.
Yeah, you know, it's just like last year when I said that, you know, the Saints going 13-3 but losing games to Tampa Bay and St. Louis was going to bite them. You know, Green Bay, and of course, it's not really their fault, but losing that game to Seattle, you know, on that interception could swing where this game was being played.
That's a nice needle, the one that they... But the thing about that is everybody's going to remember that for the last play of the game. But you're absolutely right. They got dominated in the first half. Rodgers was sacked.
Eight times, I think it was.
Yeah, they got nothing going on offense until the very end of that game. So you can say they should have won that one, which they should have, but they didn't make it...
They only scored 13
points.
They
didn't make it easy for himself, that's for sure.
I mean, you know, much how I said Joe Flacco is the key for Ravens, and I don't want to say it's all in the quarterback, but it kind of is in this case with the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, clearly the young guy who has no playoff starts and no playoff experience, who has pretty much, with the exception of the Seattle game, been pretty solid. It has put his team in places to win. Green Bay's defense does make plays, and they are fast, and he could be too quick for him. I don't think it will be. I think he's going to be okay. But let me ask you this, Dave. Is there any point in this game, you know, short of it being 28-0 in the first quarter, which isn't going to happen, but is there any point where Harbaugh goes back to Alex Smith in this game, or is he sticking with Kaepernick?
I think he's made that decision loud and clear, and at this point he has to stick with it. I mean... it was a very interesting decision, and really, if you look at San Francisco's last seven games, you know, he had that great game against Chicago, but if you look at their last seven games, you could argue that the New England game was a game that Alex Smith might not have won, but then they lose to Seattle. They ended up going 5-2, and before they made the quarterback change, they were just as good. There wasn't any noticeable difference as far as wins and losses were concerned. So now we get to see whether or not it was worth it, because again, Green Bay has trouble against the run, and so that's why you want a mobile quarterback potentially in there, and he does have the big game potential. But he's made this decision, and I think Alex Smith is going to be in a different jersey next year. There are a lot of teams that make sense for him. The Jets come to mind immediately as a team that I don't know if they're going to talk themselves into Sanchez again. But Harbaugh made this draft pick. It took this guy in the second round for him to eventually be the quarterback.
Yeah.
And went against conventional wisdom and said, Alex Smith, you are having an incredible season. You're actually on pace to break the completion percentage record. You're out. So, bearing an injury, I think it's got the next team all the way.
So, you know, things to like on both sides of the ball, for both teams. I think a few more factors might be just leaning slightly towards Green Bay, so I'm going to go with them. I like them to win 27-21. A San Francisco win wouldn't shock me at all. I don't think even a blowout either way would shock me at all, the way these two teams have played. But at this point, I like Green Bay and what is a close one and I think could be a classic.
Yeah, I'm thinking 24-21 San Francisco, but I agree. This one is, I think, the toughest on the board as far as the actual game is concerned, because I have no very strong opinion on who's going to win.
Yeah.
But I personally think those little things lean towards San Francisco, so that's what makes this game fun.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to Sunday, where Atlanta is a 2.5-point favorite over Seattle. And I have to say that last year I was in Las Vegas in December, and I meant to go. There's a half of the strip basically is owned by MGM, and half of the strip is owned by Total Rewards or the Caesars Palace Group. And for whatever reason, the MGM hotels have decided that it's not in their business model to offer legitimate future bets anymore. They just want to destroy tourists with them. All their future bets are, if a team is going off at 12-1 everywhere else in the world, they're going off at 4-1 at all the MGM hotels. And I stay at the MGM hotels. I meant to get over across the street to a different hotel to bet on the Giants last year because they were going off at 20-25-1 I said, that's the kind of team that if they catch fire, they could go. And sure enough, they did. And I was lamenting the fact that I should have had all that money. And now I find myself lamenting the fact I was just in there with in December. I find myself lamenting the fact that I didn't bet Seattle at around 20-25-1 I actually believe this team has all the makings of a Super Bowl champion at this point. The defense is outstanding. It's been outstanding all year, but over the last six games that they've won, they've been on a complete roll. And Russell Wilson has developed into a star at quarterback. Marshawn Lynch, one of the most reliable backs in the league. You're going to get around 24 points out of this offense, and that's all you're ever going to need. This team looks great, and if I'm right and they do win, next week in San Francisco or Green Bay is going to be a whale of a game, and then the following week against, say, Denver, New England, that will be a whale of a game. But when you're talking about the type of team that has the type of build to make a deep run, this is it, and beating Atlanta is the new springboard to winning the Super Bowl. So,
supposedly,
not only do I like them a lot this week, I like them a lot moving forward. But you feel differently about this game?
I can't really argue clearly against Seattle playing on fire right now. I'd be stupid not to agree with you on that. But the thing for me with Atlanta is that I didn't believe this team 2 years ago when they were 13-3 I thought Green Bay was going to beat them. I didn't think the Green Bay would destroy them, but I thought Green Bay would beat them, and they did. And then last year, I didn't think that they have ever had a shot against the Giants, and they never really did. They scored 2 points. For some reason this year, and I think Julio Jones, you know, last year Julio Jones played well. This year he played outstanding, along with, you know, Roddy White. And it's funny because this is the year where this is kind of an offense that's always built around Michael Turner and just starting to develop the passing in recent years. Now they have no running game pretty much, and the passing game is one of the best in the league, which isn't a recipe that I love in the NFL, specifically in the playoffs where you need a balanced attack. And, of course, last year, you know, I picked the Giants to win the Super Bowl each game because I thought they were the hottest team, and it's really hard to argue against Seattle. So there's my head is very confused at the moment, but what I will point to is, you know, last week I mentioned that I wasn't necessarily concerned with Seattle's struggles on the road as much anymore, and you pointed out as it could be a big factor, and it looked like it was going to be. I mean, you know, Washington jumps out the gate to a 14-0 lead, and we think we have a blowout on our hands.
Seattle completely
shuts them down if that doesn't allow a single point after. But specifically with their road struggles, what I noticed, I was looking at their schedule, they played two road games in a dome this year, and they lost to St. Louis and Detroit. That was in the middle of the season, and this team has been on fire recently.
Right.
But is there something to look into that where you have two teams that in the end of the season were bad record-wise? I mean, had moments throughout the season, sure. But to lose both those games in a road dome, and now you're going to the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, and these fans are probably more frustrated than any fans in the NFL at the moment who've had two consecutive, this is now their third year in a row, of great teams that should do well. That is a huge factor for me, and one of the main reasons why I actually think Atlanta is going to win this game. I don't know if it's just me thinking that it's finally their time to do so, but I will say this factor, and Seattle's playing fantastic, but I don't know if this is necessarily what it is, but it just kind of makes sense in my head, and I don't know if you can agree with me or disagree with this, but
lay it on me.
You know, Atlanta, I think, has been intimidated in the past in the NFL, in the playoffs. I think they were intimidated by the Packers who were coming in on fire. They jumped out to a big lead, and they just kind of put their tail between their legs and gave up. And New York last year, I mean, Eli Manning has led them to a Super Bowl, you know, and they were playing fantastic, and they struggled in the beginning, and I think they just kind of gave up. Seattle is a very upstart team and is playing fantastic football, but I don't know that they bring the same presence the Giants do, or the Packers, or now this year if they play the 49ers, you know. So I think that might have something to do with it. I think that Atlanta has a legitimate swagger that maybe they didn't have the past couple of years, and I don't know that they look at Seattle and are immediately scared by it as maybe they should be, but, you know, I think what do you think of that? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I mean, on top of that, whether it's that they were subconsciously scared or subconsciously not ready or subconsciously thought they dominated the regular season, so therefore they should dominate the playoffs. Whatever their problem has been over the last 2 years, it should be long gone at this point. They get destroyed by Green Bay, and then they get completely embarrassed again last year, 24-2 against the Giants. So whatever was plaguing them in their brains shouldn't be anymore. This should be as focused of a team coming off of a bye as you're possibly going to see. Mm-hmm. It should be as loud of a stadium as you're possibly going to hear. That all makes sense, and you might be right about Seattle on the road. I was saying going into last week, if you were going to pick against Seattle, you might as well be doing it because they're on the road. And now you can add the Washington game. They've now won 3 straight on the road, but it's still at a weak Chicago team that was very weak at the time, at Buffalo in Toronto. And against the Washington Redskins team that admittedly didn't have RG3 at 100% coming into the game, and didn't have him at 50% for the vast majority of the game. So it's a fair criticism of Seattle, especially after that slow start. If they get off to a slow start and they let this place get going, I don't think it's going to slip away. I don't think Atlanta will drop a 14-point lead like Washington did last week. But when you look at the X's and O's of this game, you talk about how great this passing attack is, and it is. I think Seattle's secondary, safeties and corners, is the fastest and one of the best in all of football. It's outstanding, and it's proven it against great teams throughout the year. It's shut down a lot of strong teams, a lot of strong receiving cores. Two major X's and O's things working against Atlanta. That's one of them. They're one-dimensional on offense. Uh-huh. When you're one-dimensional on offense, look what happened to Minnesota last week. All they could do is run. Therefore, let's load the box and let's take care of it. Seattle can play a zone all game long. They can put whoever they want on island, get double covers all game long. Atlanta can't run the ball. Atlanta's not going to run the ball against this Seattle defense that doesn't allow running. Yeah. Seattle can comfortably pin its ears back and defend against the pass all game long. That doesn't bode well for Atlanta. Atlanta also defensively allowed 123 rushing yards per game against, one of the worst rushing defenses in the league. Seattle happens to be one of the best rushing offenses in the game. So on top of the fact that Seattle is red hot, I think they match up extremely well against Atlanta on both sides of the ball. And so it is tough because I think it goes without saying, you know, I always talk about revenge and motivation and all that. And again, you're not going to get more fired up than Atlanta is going to be for this game. And nobody likes to be disrespected. And Atlanta has, over the last couple years now, been universally disrespected because they're not getting it done in the playoffs. Yep. And so we all just say, oh, this is cute. They're a regular season team. And then we brush them off. They haven't given us any reason not to yet. And they'd love nothing more than to give all their haters a reason not to. Having said all that, who's not motivated in the playoffs? No. That was one of the biggest mistakes I made early when I used to handicap games. I make a lot of mistakes still. But I'd say, oh, this team is more motivated than this team. All these guys are playing for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Even if Atlanta is more motivated than Seattle, it's not by a whole lot. These guys want to win the Super Bowl, too. They haven't been going through training camps and nursing injuries and playing through them and everything to say, well, Atlanta needs it more than we do. They're going to be fired up, too, so I yield to the X's and O's, which I think heavily favors Seattle in this game.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a really emotional game. I mean, you look at last week after the Seattle-Washington game where Mike Sherman got in the face of I forget the player. Do you remember the player who shoved? He got shoved in the face. There was a borderline brawl breaking out.
And great concentration by him to not fight back. He was like, you know what? Yeah. I'm not going to get involved in this.
I'm still playing.
You're going home. I'm not getting suspended.
Yeah, I mean, this game could be a classic. I could literally see any form of result here, from an Atlanta blowout to a Seattle blowout. I tend to think and I hope that it's going to be a closer game, and I think it will be. I just, for some reason, I agree with you on the X's and O's and the hot team, but for me to actually believe, for whatever reason, that Atlanta is going to win a big game is a big deal, because I don't like the Falcons. I'm a Saints fan.
There's nothing wrong with going with your gut. I mean,
gut feeling says that Atlanta shakes it off this week. I don't think that they beat whoever wins between San Francisco and Green Bay, personally, at the moment. If they go out and destroy Seattle, I may think differently. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I like Atlanta to edge out what I hope is going to be a really close game. I think in the area, all these games I have around the 27-24, 30-24 area. So I think I'm going to have that as well for Atlanta. I like 27-24, a really close game, but they actually pulled out.
I like it 27-14 Seattle. I think they just take care of it. And once again, Atlanta's kind of the laughing stock of the league.
Yeah.
And eventually they will break out of it, I believe. I mean, I like Matt Ryan. I like this team, and the offense is great. It's just these matchups have been brutal. It's not like they're getting beat by lousy teams. They've been beaten by the last two Super Bowl champs, and now they're facing the Seattle team that, like I said, just an elite defense, an elite running game, a quarterback coming into his own. It's just a terrible matchup. I would actually like them better if they were at home against San Francisco, Green Bay, Washington. I think this is the worst matchup they could have drew, and they drew it, and that's part of the bad luck. So we'll see. A part of me hopes that they get over it, because I don't like rooting against those guys. But I think Seattle's just going to win comfortably, and the curse continues. So moving on to the last game, New England hosting Houston. Kind of a shame you get two really good 2.5-point spread games there. We can go back and forth, differing opinions. It's going to be hard to make a case for the Houston Texans going into New England.
Which is amazing to say, considering they started 11-1. I mean, we forget.
And we were both, I was the one saying, 11-1, they're the best team in the league here.
Part of the big reason that we kind of just put them on the back burner was the 42-14 blowout they suffered at the hands of New England in New England in December. So it's really hard to make a legitimate argument for Houston coming back and winning this. If anything, you could go way back and draw on the Jets when they got blown out by New England in December a few years ago, came into New England and dominated that game. Of course, these are two completely different teams. No,
but that's a valid bring up.
Exactly. But with Houston, it's so interesting, because this team has looked so good at times, and then they just get blown out by New England and Green Bay. And what's funny is that they dominated Denver when
they lost Indy by double digits.
Yeah, and they dominated Denver when they played in, but that was in one of the first 4 weeks of the season. And I think that was when Denver was struggling in the first half. I think in this game they were down like 31-3. Denver came back and actually made it a game. But if Denver played Houston at this point, I think that Denver would have a similar blowout fashion to what New England and Green Bay had. Just because this defense, for whatever reason, well, not for whatever reason, against great offenses, they're just terrible, pretty much. And they're going to have to figure out a way to change that. I've always said, and I don't know if they did this too much in the last game, I didn't actually watch a ton of it, but if J.J. Watt is comfortable playing on both sides of the defensive end, I think that they should put him on whatever side Wes Welker is lining up at. Because he can bat down four or five balls.
Yeah, you'd think that was one of the weirdest things about that blowout game. You'd think J.J. Watt would be the type of guy that would be a kryptonite for Brady, but he really wasn't ever able to factor into that last game.
No, and New England, since the middle of October, has lost one game, and it was that game to San Francisco where they were getting blown out, came back, and almost got a win with it. The defense, for me, pretty much as always with New England, I think is going to be the key in the end, because with New England, you know they're going to get 27 points probably comfortably, and I don't see any reason at home against this Houston defense that they shouldn't do that. The Houston offense struggled last week.
It's been struggling.
To say the least.
It's been struggling.
Has been struggling for a while. So because of that, I don't think New England comes in scared at all. I think they come in pretty comfortable at home. And New England's defense, to give them credit, they can get blown out at times, but they can also make plays.
Yeah, New England's defense, coming into for the first couple months of the season, I think that was their biggest problem, and that was the reason why I thought come playoff time they'd be vulnerable. But in December, four of their five games, they held teams under 20 points, the only exception being that San Francisco blowout, which was a pretty bizarre game all around. Yeah. San Francisco isn't really a 40-plus point type of team anyway.
No.
But, you tip your cap to them. But other than that, they held opposing offenses down, including this Houston team. And Houston, yeah, for the last 5 weeks, they haven't scored 20 points. And here's a team that was consistently in the high 20s, but New England all year long, they're averaging 35 points a game. You know what you're going to get out of New England.
Yeah, and what have we said about New England all year, this hot streak, that, you know, even during their Super Bowl runs of last year and a couple years before, the defense was always suspect and they never had a running game. And this year they have both.
Right.
So when you have both of those, I mean, I think we can stop talking about this Houston game and just pray that that New England and Denver play next week, where we can talk about half an hour on.
Yeah, here's what sums up. Here's what sums up this game for me. You look at the Denver-Baltimore game, and I say, what's the difference between this game and Week 15? And I can say Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Not only the heart and soul of the defense, but the heart and soul of the defense making his victory lap around the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Yeah. I don't think it's going to affect the game that much, but that's a big deal. What's the difference between this game and the Monday Night Football blowout in Week 14? Well, Gronkowski's back, and New England has had a week to prepare for this one. So I don't understand.
And a couple other losses for Houston and a bad win last week.
So I don't understand, really, what the case for Houston is here when all the little things I could point to end up favoring New England.
The only possible thing that I can grasp at for Houston is we know how good they can play. We've seen it this year before. If they find a way to bring that back in New England, I don't think they will. But if they can find a way, they certainly have the talent on both sides of the ball to compete with this team and anybody in the league. But just the way they're playing right now, it's just not going to happen. When you're in the Elite Eight, if you will, of the playoffs, you have to bring your A game every single week. They haven't been doing that for the last month, so what's to think that they're going to change that this week?
Hey, and I have to say, last week I was saying Cincinnati was going to win that game, and Cincinnati came into that game red hot, and major credit to Houston for winning.
Especially
that
the
game.
Defense. The only touchdown was a defensive. Great.
But, having watched that game, I mean, Cincinnati did not look good. That was not their best effort.
Absolutely.
I left that game.
I take hardly anything.
Yeah, I left that game not saying, well, Houston proved me wrong, and more just saying, yeah, Cincinnati didn't really show up for that one.
Yeah,
so,
no, agree.
I hope Houston shows up and makes this a game, because at the beginning of the year, or even going into that Monday Night Football game, this looked like a really good game. Yeah. But now all of a sudden we're laughing it off, and Houston hasn't given us any reason not to. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have New England 30-17 in this one.
That sounds about right to me. Yeah. So, as always, you can email me at VegasDavesDime@gmail.com.
Or me at KevinJTAY@gmail.com. And you can check out this podcast and all things sports at sportsinvasion.net.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. Enjoy the playoffs, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.